Access more.
Glorious day, fellow traveler. Welcome to Science and God with Dr. G. That's me, Dr. Michael Gillen, physicist, astronomer, mathematician, and Christian. That's right, living, breathing evidence that science and Christianity are not mortal enemies, but good friends. Actually, an awesome power couple.
Quarks, gluons, and the Bible. Today's journey is inspired by a message I received from a fellow traveler named Sue. Thank you, Sue. You know, back when I was in elementary school, I was taught that each atom is like a little solar system. You know, it has a nucleus in the middle, just like the sun, and circling all around it like planets are a bunch of electrons. But we no longer believe that. According to quantum mechanics, each atom is like a puff of fog. Nothing about it is crystal clear. The best we can say is this. The nucleus is probably in the middle of the fog somewhere, and the electrons are probably somewhere all around it. But we can never be sure because, technically speaking, the nucleus and the electrons can be anywhere at any given time. Pretty crazy. Anyway, that's what we believe today. Now, when I was a kid, I used to love popcorn balls. Have you ever had those? You know, popcorn stuck together with corn syrup and shaped into a ball. Delicious and fun. And we used to put food coloring in it too sometimes to make it even more fun. Today, we believe each atomic nucleus is like a popcorn ball of protons and neutrons, stuck together not by corn syrup, but by what we call the strong force, okay? One other thing. We used to believe that protons and neutrons themselves were like hard little billiard balls, but not anymore. We now believe that each proton and each neutron is itself like a tiny popcorn ball of even tinier particles called quarks. Yes, quarks. Now, the idea of quarks was first proposed back in 1964 by two physicists, Murray Gell-Mann and George Zweig, both of whom won the Nobel Prize. Now, quark is a nonsense word that comes from the novel Finnegan's Wake by James Joyce. In it, there's a short sentence that goes like this: three quarks for Muster Mark. Anyway, it's a hard novel to read. In case you've ever tried, you know what I mean. Anyway, back in 1964, Gell-Mann claimed that quarks come in three different flavors. So it fit, you know, the sentence, three quarks for Muster Mark. By the time I got to grad school, quarks had radically changed our view of the entire subatomic world. Here's what I mean. Number one, we used to believe that electric charge only comes in whole units, you know, one, two, three, and so forth. That it can't be divided up, you know, like a pizza. No. But in 1964, when quarks came along, that old belief was thrown out the window because quarks, get this, were said to have charges of one-third and two-thirds. I remember first learning about that and I thought, what? Charges come in fractions, in thirds of all things? Anyway, that was big news back then. Number two, our ideas about quarks have changed a lot, a whole lot, since 1964. For starters, we now believe quarks come in six flavors, not three. We call the flavors up, down, top, bottom, strange, and charm. What's more, each flavor supposedly comes in three colors, red, green, and blue. And by the way, If you haven't already guessed, the words flavor and color are totally whimsical, so don't take them literally, all right? That's physicists' idea of humor. Yes, we do have a sense of humor. Anyway, for a long time, we thought quarks only appear in nature as pairs and triplets. Two up quarks plus one down quark appears as a proton. One up quark plus one anti-down quark appears as a particle called a pion, and so forth. Recently, however, we were surprised to find that quarks also appear in nature as quadruplets and quintuplets. Now, those combinations are rare, but when they happen, we call them tetraquarks and pentaquarks. A new pentaquark and a pair of new tetraquarks were just detected at the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland. That discovery made the news, and it is what prompted Sue's message to me, all right? Number three, no one has ever seen a quark in real life, okay? And according to our best theory, no one ever will. Everything we claim to know about individual quarks, therefore, is based on speculation and indirect evidence. Now, sure, the idea of quarks helps explain the atomic nucleus in amazing detail, and that's why scientists won the Nobel Prize for it. But in all honesty, there are other possible explanations for what we see in our experiments. So what that means is we'll always have to take the existence of quarks on faith. All right, enlightened faith, but faith nevertheless. By definition, quarks fall into the category of unseen and unseeable realities. Which makes me think of this. During the Middle Ages, a group of intellectuals called scholastics tried weaving together physics and Christianity in a very detailed logical way. Now, one of those scholastics, Thomas Aquinas, was fascinated with angels and pondered the question, can two angels occupy the same place at the same time? His answer, published in Summa Theologica, was no. Two angels cannot occupy the same place at the same time. There are people who make fun of Aquinas for his fascination with angels and spending so much time pondering a question like, can two angels occupy the same place at the same time? Yet today, my friend, today, we modern scientists are fascinated with particles just as mysterious as angels. We call them bosons. What we discovered is this. Because of their otherworldly nature, and there's really no other way to put it, two bosons can occupy the same place at the same time. Ordinary physical particles can't do that. You and I can't do that, my friend. What's more, an especially weird kind of boson, called gluons, are what hold quarks together. At least that's what we believe. Why do I say gluons are especially weird? Well, for one thing, gluons are what we call virtual particles. That means they're at once real and not real. They're like apparitions that exist in a kind of twilight zone. And for another, gluons have such a tight grip on quarks. No known force in the physical universe can ever overcome it. Let me say that again. Gluons have such a tight grip on quarks. No known force in the entire physical universe can ever overcome it. We call that supernatural grip quark confinement. The harder you try pulling quarks apart, the more tightly gluons resist, the more tightly gluons hang on. You know, it's like one of those Chinese finger cuffs, those straw tubes you buy in novelty shops. You stick your left finger in one end of the tube and your right finger in the other end of the tube. And the harder you try pulling your fingers apart, the more the straw tube tightens around them. That's quirk confinement. All right? One last point. 2 centuries ago, we didn't understand why there were so many chemical elements. You know, why do they come in so many different forms? Is there any rhyme or reason to their diversity? Well, in 1869, a Russian chemist named Dmitry Ivanovich Mendeleev gave us the answer. He discovered that chemical elements are like puzzle pieces. You know, when you fit them together just right, they form a big, beautiful picture. We call that big, beautiful picture the periodic table. Today, periodic table is the most important thing kids learn in high school chemistry class. Remember that? I do. Anyway, in the late 20th century, we discovered the very same thing about subatomic particles. To date, we've counted more than 200 different varieties. That's more than the varieties of chemical elements. But by fitting them together like puzzle pieces, we've discovered they create a big, beautiful picture. We call that big, beautiful picture the Standard Model of Elementary Particles and Fields. And you probably haven't heard about it because it's not taught in high school, but it is in grad school. And it is just as important, just as consequential to we scientists as the periodic table of chemical elements. All right? So do you see what I'm saying here, my friend? You and I routinely look up at the stars and are dazzled by the beauty and elegance of the heavens. Thousands of years ago, the psalmist put it this way, quote, "The heavens proclaim the glory of God. The skies display his craftsmanship. Day after day, they continue to speak. They speak without a sound or word, yet their message has gone throughout the earth and to all the world." End quote. What I'm saying to you on today's journey is this. The tiniest things in the universe also proclaim the glory of God and display his craftsmanship. When we peer into the inner world of the atom, at the very core of what we're made of, we see the same dazzling beauty and elegance as when we look up at the stars. Like the galaxy, stars, and planets in the heavens, the quarks, gluons, and other magnificent oddities of the subatomic world speak without a word or without a sound. Yet, their message is unmistakable. They speak not of random forces banging out a universe by accident, but of a beautiful and elegant mind. A mind that produced a cosmos that's stunning through and through, from the astronomical to the subatomic, right down to the invisible quarks and the supernatural gluons that hold them together. A beautiful and elegant mind that William Blake celebrates in his wonderful poem, Auguries of Innocence. To see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wildflower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour.
Okay, that's it for now. Remember, this podcast is not a lecture series. It's a conversation. So now it's your turn. Comments? Questions? I'm eager to hear from you. There's all kinds of ways you can connect up with me via my social media links in the show notes below. Till next time, I'm still Dr. G saying, I love science. I love God. I also love you, my fellow traveler. Thanks for listening.